Cat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, Week 9 DraftKings picks and preview. Of course, you can always find the updated cheat sheet all the way up until Sunday on Roto Experts and SportsGrid.com. Also, there is no DFS ownership show this week. I will be out of town at a wedding. I'll have the updated stuff for Sunday morning, but, you know, on Friday and Saturday, I'll probably be incommunicado. I might still be able to get the Excel together and tweet that out or put it in this column or as part of this video if you do want to check out the ownership percentages. But let's get into the actual picks and preview by position for this week. On the line with me was supposed to be Mike Leone, but he's sick. Probably sick of Davis Maddock, who's also on the line. What's up?
Not much, man. Just I survived. I survived the chalk failure week.
Hey, listen, the one decent thing about when all the chalk fails in terms of, like, cash games is everyone has the same guys anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So you always are leaving yourself out.
Yeah. So if you, even if you just differentiated a little bit in cash games last week, you were looking pretty good. And like we just kind of spoke before we got on, I guess my big separation was Fedorowicz over Barnage, and that enough was good enough to propel me into the money pretty safely.
Yeah, that's really all you needed. I ended up swapping to Jeff Janis from Ty Montgomery when he was announced out.
I see.
Janis catching that touchdown saved me.
Did you have Adams in already?
Yeah, I had both of them in.
Okay, see, I didn't have Devonta Adams, and I had Montgomery, and so that was a very easy flop for me.
Yeah, that should have been that, and that should have been the swap everyone made.
No, I mean, it was the most logical. They were, what, $200 separated apart, and when one goes out, it leaves a lot of opportunity for the other one.
Well, who I actually should have swapped to is Jordan Matthews, who had a huge game, but I did not. I had the money for it, too, but I didn't quite make that swap.
Were you really feeling Jordan Matthews last week, though?
No, but, I mean, I wasn't really feeling any of the choices. My choices were Jordan Matthews, Tyrell Williams, Jeff Janis, and then the guy I didn't really consider that I probably should have was Mohamed Sanu, but he didn't really come up, like, across the radar for me much.
All right, well, let's try to be a bit more accurate this week. We'll see if the chalk hits, but I think there's very specific chalk this week, and we'll see that when we go to the top of the running backs, because Ezekiel...
Well, this slate of games is fucking terrible, Pat.
Yeah, it's not great, but, you know, we're talking Sunday-only slate in terms of DraftKings, so just the one late games and the Sunday nighter, so no Thursday, no Monday here. At least there's no London game this week. We get an extra game on this slate, but everyone is going to have Ezekiel Elliott at the top, right?
Yeah, he's the chalk, but I actually think like there's a little bit of leverage and just going 100% of him this week. You know, a lot of people differentiate their tournament lineups, but I think the player pool is so narrow this week, you should just go 100% Zeke across the board.
I mean, if everyone's going to own Zeke, does it make sense if, let's say, you don't want to go massively overweight on him, go underweight and just load up on Le'Veon Bell? Who, I mean, it's not like Le'Veon Bell's some scrub, but no one's going to take him because everyone's taking Zeke.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if Roethlisberger is going to be back this week. I've seen a couple reports saying he's doing everything he can to get back, but that he's not good to go yet. No, it's... He's going to have to try pretty hard to get ready to go. And, like, I totally see the floor argument for Bell, but without Bannon, I don't see the ceiling comparable.
How many catches did Bell end up with the week that Landry played the Patriots? Like 9 or 10?
I will tell you right now, he had 13 targets and 10 receptions.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't expect that much. And they fed him the ball over and over on the ground. I mean, the Patriots knew what was coming, but Bell still managed it because he's awesome. I think there is a case to be made that, I don't know, maybe it's a week where Zeke puts up like 160 rushing yards, yet somehow doesn't find the end zone. Maybe Dak runs one in. Maybe they bring in Alfred Morris. You're playing against that. It's not, you know, the best idea in the world, but if you wanted to get away from Zeke, I think that's a way you could go.
Yeah, it's a way you can go, but it's just such a great spot for Zeke. It's so hard for me to not just take 100% of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And with some of the values down at other positions, you can actually afford to do that pretty easily. So at the top, Ezekiel Elliott is $7,900. He's followed by Le'Veon Bell at $7,700. DeMarco and his foot problems are $76. Spencer Ware may or may not play. Probably not play, right?
Yeah, I haven't gotten like a good update. I know that Perez Taylor, the Chiefs beat writer, tweeted that Ware definitely did fail the second step of the concussion protocol and the iPad stuff back in the locker room on Sunday, and Alex Smith is already declared inactive. So I think the Chiefs, like, I don't think the Chiefs are going to press on Ware, and if he doesn't play, West is, like, the best play of the week.
So, yeah, oh, yeah, especially in cash games at his price point. But Matt Forte is next at $6,500, followed by Devonta Booker in a huge salary jump after everyone used him last week. Melvin Gordon, Carlos Hyde, Jay Ajayi, and Todd Gurley. Weirdly enough, I really like these guys in the lower $6,000 range, and I think they're all going to go overlooked because everyone's going to pay up for Ezekiel Elliott. So, like, Melvin Gordon is in a really nice spot at home against Tennessee. I believe he is third in the league in routes run by running backs. He presents a nice floor, and we know what his touchdown upside is. Even if he's not the best running back in the world, he can still produce fantasy points at a very high clip. Devonta Booker, I think people are going to be off of him because he's not a sterling value anymore, and he's in an awesome spot against a really terrible Oakland defense. I know he has a shoulder problem. He could get eliminated early from this game, but I just look at him. He had 24 touches last week. He had 5 catches, which, again, presents him a very nice floor and gives him a lot of volume, a lot of market share in that backfield, and, you know, he's probably going to end up with all the goal line touches as well in a really favorable matchup for him on the road, you know, as a pick-em, one-point favorite, one-point underdog, wherever you look, against one of the league's worst run Ds. Carlos Hyde, if he plays, might be the steal of the week at $6,100 against New Orleans, though.
I don't mind Hyde. The guy that I would play here, and I honestly hate to do this because I really don't like him, but Melvin Gordon. I think 7 targets in back-to-back games. The Chargers have ran 45 rushes plus pass attempts in the red zone. Melvin Gordon has gotten a rush or a target on 20 of those, or not inside the red zone, inside the 10-yard line. So I think if I was looking to go away from Ware, from Elliott, from West, and from Bell, Melvin would be the one that I would pivot on to. And I hate Melvin Gordon, honestly. So that's a strong take. It's hard for me to say that.
I just think that all these guys are going to be around. Maybe Gordon is the outlier of the bunch, but between him, Booker, Hyde, and even Todd Gurley at $5,800.
Booker is sharp, I think.
Yeah, but I think Booker's going to be an excellent play. I mean, it's a very easy way to differentiate your team if everyone is taking Elliott. And if the logical pivot off of Elliott is Bell, that might increase his ownership as well. I just feel like these guys are all going to be probably max 10% owned.
Yeah, because so much of the ownership is going to be concentrated on Elliott
and West
or Ware and Bell, yeah.
Yeah. So in this next little level here, like, I want to talk about Todd Gurley for a second. $5,800. I know he's not great, but he is seeing more work out of the backfield, which is kind of nice in the receiving game. And he's still one of the few running backs you can count on to get 15-plus carries. He's going to get around, like, 5-6 targets, and he's going to get all the goal line touches. This is one of the worst matchups he could have. Carolina's only allowing 3.3 yards per carry. He's only averaging 3 yards per carry. It's not a good scene, but it feels like everyone is off of him. He's kind of like the Allen Robinson of running backs. But is there a case to be made for Gurley in a week where no one's going to use him?
I think I said on like week 3 or 4 on the show that I just wasn't going to use Gurley this year, and that stance has not changed.
All right,
because he's still getting used in the passing game a little bit more. 7, 4, 5, and 5 are his targets over the last month, but I don't know. Like he still doesn't have a 100-yard rushing game. He's only topped 20 carries twice. Like this is just not a conducive fantasy environment.
Jamal Charles, obviously out for the season. He would lead this at $5,500. He's followed by Stewart at 52, coming off some pretty impressive performances lately. Derrick Henry at 5 Gs, probably, unless Murray is out, that's something you don't want to touch. Theo Riddick, I think, is very interesting in a bad matchup against the Vikings at $4,900.
I mean, he's a lock for 8 catches for 23 yards.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Like, after seeing what Jordan Howard did in the Monday nighter out of the backfield, how that was just kind of open the entire time, you'd have to think that Riddick takes advantage of that, too.
Yeah, and you know their linebackers generally are kind of slow, and you know their pass rushers are not guys who drop back into coverage very often. So I totally see the reasoning for using Riddick. Like I don't want to use him, but I do think he is viable.
Under Riddick is Ingram at 48, West at 47, Almo, Alfred Morris at 4,600, D'Angelo, and Gore at 45. Cherkandrick West, who we just talked about, at 44, Matt Asiata at $4,300. From this range, I don't know what's going on with the Ingram Hightower situation, and it's one of the primo matchups of the week. Are they just a stay away, or is one of them a guy to target just in case they get all the work and go off?
Sprinkle some Hightower in tournaments, but I've got a guy you can use in cash down here.
Is it Duke Johnson because he rules?
It's Darren Sproles.
No, you use Duke Johnson.
He had 15 carries last week. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson said that, you know, Ryan Matthews remains the lead guy, but he's been playing about 24-26% of the snaps. Sproles has 7 targets last week in a game that they led. So I think Sproles is one of the stronger values at the running back position outside of West if he starts.
The one thing I like to add on with Sproles too is the Giants have had a lot of problems dealing with these like little quick guys just on these little dump off passes. We saw it 2 weeks ago in London with Tavon Austin. Like, he didn't pile up a ton of yardage, but he was just open all the time. They can deploy Sproles in that manner. I'm with you. He could probably end up with 6-7 catches again, but I just think with the game script being so favorable to Duke Johnson, I feel like I talk about Duke Johnson every week, but now that McCown is back, it's the easiest throw on the field, and they're not afraid to throw with Josh McCown under center. And now it looks like Corey Coleman's back. You have Pryor, who's back to being full health. Burnage is somewhat involved. Then you have Duke Johnson. Like, he's probably going to end up with 6 to 8 targets in this game. It's going to be pretty easy for him to recoup at, you know, close to triple value as a floor pretty easily if he ends up with 6 receptions at $4,000, isn't he? There may not be a need for it, but I do think he is a good value.
So the thing that would suck for Duke is that this game is just going to be played so slow relative to how Browns games normally go. Because a lot of times what happens is the Browns are just passing a ton, you know, in these comeback efforts, but they're just going to have less possessions and less plays because they're playing against Dallas, who situation neutral is, you know, the slowest team in football.
Yeah, but that might be with how bad the Browns run defense is. I mean, you might see Zeke rip off some like 50-yard runs here and score a touchdown, and then boom, Browns back on the field.
It's not impossible, but I definitely would take Sproles over Duke.
I mean, West is the play down in that range, though, right? As long as Spencer Ware is out.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I would. I'm thinking that if Ware sits out, I will just make, you know, my 10, 20 lineups or whatever and just play Elliott and West and all of them.
Wow. Like, you don't feel like you can create, like, isn't everyone going to do that?
Oh, I just learned nothing from last week. I'm just going right back to the chalk death.
Well, do you remember Cherkandrick West chalk week from last year? That was the emergence of Spencer Ware.
Yep. Yeah, he just broke his knee or tore his ACL.
Yeah, whatever. No, he didn't tear his ACL because he ended up coming back at some point in the season. He was back like 3 weeks. Yeah, he hurt his knee. He was back like 3 weeks later, and then no one knew what to do with the situation. But if it is just him there, I don't think Bishop Sankey is going to be stealing too many carries away from him. At least I hope to God he doesn't. That would be insane. Matt Asiata against the Lions, $4,300. It was reported today Jerick McKinnon expects to play. At least, sorry, he expects
Otherwise,
to
play. Otherwise, I would have said Asiata was a play without that.
Well, okay, but Jerick said he was going to play last week, too, and he didn't play. Like, he was still in a walking boot as of yesterday. So if he doesn't play, Asiata becomes very much in play here, too, at 43, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if McKinnon doesn't play, yeah, we have to like Asiata. Like, he had 7 targets last week, and they were trailing. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and this is a much, much, much better matchup up against the Lions. Is there anyone else from down the list you like? Like, are you going to roll the dice on Aaron Ripkowski?
No, I'm not going to roll the dice. You play Green Bay pass catchers. They're just trying to not run the ball at all.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get to that when we get to cash game quarterbacks, because I think I'm just going to go all in on Rodgers and just hope he throws the ball 70 times, because that would be fun. Is there anyone else from the bottom of the list, though? Because I'm not really seeing anyone.
No.
Hightower,
that would
I guess.
That would be it for me. Yeah, Hightower, I think, is a legitimate tournament play.
What do you think he ends up with this week? Like, if you had to think about the distribution in touches and snaps and everything, doesn't it just feel like Ingram's going to be back on top and continue being the worst?
The thing is, the matchup's so good, they can both pay off.
Yeah, what's Hightower's price? 3?
Hightower's price is $4,000.
Oh, he's $4,000?
So that's going to actually... that's going to depress his ownership a lot. Not that anyone's trying to pile on Tim Hightower, but he's not just a mid-south guy you can just toss in there.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess if they name him the starter, his value is going to go way up, and maybe that keeps people off Sproles. I have a feeling Sproles, maybe West soaks up all the ownership in that level, but I feel like Sproles is going to be pretty popular coming off the week. And it would not be out of the realm of possibility that Darren Sproles just goes back to being regular Darren Sproles. I mean, that game was in primetime, and we know Darren Sproles shows up in primetime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great narrative.
It's funny. I did a big thing on it a few years ago, and I think he averages like 8 more fantasy points in primetime games than any other game. Isn't that nuts?
Is that real?
It was. Yeah. At the time, I don't know how it's gone over like the last 2 years, but whenever they play under the lights on national TV, Darren Sproles always shows up.
Darren Sproles only play.
Yeah, only play when he's playing in the Sunday night or get him in. Wide receivers. Antonio Brown is at the top. He's back. We're still not sure about the Ben news. I think either way, he's still the best receiver of the week. It was very clear. Landry Jones was getting at him, but he's $8,900. No Julio and Evans on this main slate is kind of killer, but Beckham is 2 in a bad matchup. Jordy Nelson, 78. Cooper in a bad matchup, 77. Hilton, Cooks, Bryant, Marshall, Jarvis Landry, and Allen Robinson are your top 10 in terms of pricing. I have a few guys, actually 2 guys in particular, I really like this week, and I think I'm going to be using in basically all my lineups. And they're not expensive. They're not cheap, but they're not expensive.
Are they Devontae Adams and Dante Moncrief?
It's not Moncrief. I was going to say Michael Thomas, Tyrell Williams, and then Devontae Adams.
Yeah, I love both of those calls. Michael Thomas in particular.
Michael Thomas has led the Saints in target since week 3. He has the most catches on the team. He leads them in red zone looks, and there is really no difference between his home and road splits. Like, when you look at Cooks, I think Cooks is averaging 18 points a game at home, but only like 12 on the road. Thomas is just 15 across the board, and this is the best matchup you can have. The Niners give up the most touchdowns.
He actually averages more DraftKings points away from home than at home.
See, this is a perfect situation. Like, when I did my week-long rankings for season-long, I put him inside the top 10. Like, I think he's like lock and load, ready to go here.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with the Tyrell Williams call as well.
Yeah, I kind of did a bit of a deeper dive on him, and I was just looking like, well, his stats don't look so great, and it's not like he was starting week one. So I threw out week one, and I looked at every game that he started so far, and he's averaging 17.5 DK points per week anytime he doesn't play Denver.
That seems pretty good.
Yeah, for 5 Gs, I mean, that's basically what you're looking for. And he has the most red zone targets in the league without catching a touchdown on any of those targets. So eventually, positive touchdown regression is have to play a bit of a factor with Tyrell the Gazelle. So I'm in on him this week. And Travis Benjamin is a bit beat up, too. Like, he may not play. And even if he does, he might be limited. And he's getting 20% of the market share right now in terms of Rivers' targets. Even if those get, let's say 10% of them end up going to Williams, which would make a lot of sense, since they have identical ADOTs at 12.2, that just increases more of his already 18% market share. You push that up to around 25%, and you're looking at probably one of the best plays of the week.
Yeah, I want to keep a narrow wide receiver range this week, though. I think Tyrell is not getting enough pub right now. Like,
good.
In my initial sort of reading of stuff going on around the industry, Moncrief is going to be the super chalk, though.
What, Moncrief is $5,800? Like, what? Why Moncrief?
The total for that game is really high. Everyone knows that that's the game to attack. That should have a high pace, a lot of pass attempts. He played 94% of the snaps last week. He had the 45-yard touchdown called back. Like, I just think, and a lot of people watch that game too because it was the afternoon game. So I just think he's like, and people love Dante Moncrief.
Yeah, well, I mean, you especially. Didn't we have the thing last year where every week it was just play Decker and Moncrief and Cash and be on your way?
Then be on your way. Yeah, absolutely. Adams is probably the guy I will have the most of, though.
Adams comes in at $5,900. But, I mean, like, if you filled out a cash team plus flex, realistically, let's say with Adams, Moncrief, Michael Thomas, and Tyrell Williams, if that's the way you wanted to go, just think about what else. You could afford everyone else if you wanted to. Not that you need to, because we just talked about, like, 3 or 4 value running backs. Like, I'm finding it really hard to pay up this week, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, the only thing would be is that if you decide you want to take Antonio Brown in cash.
Do you want to take Antonio Brown in cash? I know he's safe, but I don't think that...
I do not, no.
Like, are you going to roll him out in tournaments?
I think I would, yeah, just because his offensive involvement should stay the same, and because there are a bunch of good mid-tier wide receiver plays, he's going to come in just at really low-owned. Like, I don't think there's going to be an ownership concentration on him at all.
Back to those, like, top 10 guys, because if you do want to pay up and take some shots, like, would you be willing to roll out a Beckham lineup or two, even against the Eagles?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Like, that's just sort of the whole theory behind tournament plays, taking good players and not so obviously good spots.
Do we expect Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb to be back?
So Ty Montgomery has, like, sickle cell or something, and they can't quite figure out what's wrong with him, so they might just not play him at all. And Cobb, I don't have a good report on yet, but if those guys are out, we're going right back to the well. Like, I think Janice is even playable in tournaments again.
What's Janice at? Is Janice at $3,300?
Janice is at $3,300, yeah.
Yeah, he played, what, 94% of the snaps last week? I think that's what it was?
58 of a possible 62.
Can I just kind of throw out that Jeff Janice isn't all that good?
How dare you?
He's not. I'm sorry.
No, you should be sorry.
Well, I just said I'm sorry. I know it pains you, but, like, this isn't Antonio Brown we're talking about here.
He's bigger than Antonio Brown and faster than him, too.
Really? He's faster?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, seriously.
Then why isn't he better?
Because Aaron Rodgers hates him for whatever reason.
That's the only reason. He hates him so much he's just on the sidelines despite being probably the best receiver in the NFL.
He's not the best receiver in the NFL, but he's probably the second-best receiver on that team.
No, they love Devontae. Listen, if he can't get on the field over Devontae Adams, who doesn't seem to run the right routes ever, I mean, there's something going on there.
Oh, wait, hold on. Massive, massive oversight here. Jarvis Landry against the Jets.
I was just about to bring him up. He's $7,100. Brandon Marshall on the other side is $73. I think this might be a nice spot to get Brandon Marshall at a very low ownership because Anunua out-targeted him last week.
Yeah, I have absolutely no problem with that, but Landry is the guy in that 7K range I'd really be targeting. Like, not that he'll play against Revis a ton, but the fact that Revis is not even trying basically means that the Jets are playing 10 on 11 on offense, and that's just not great. Their pass defense is horrible.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
I mean, for me, the guy I was looking at actually for tournaments was 3,900 Kenny Stills, just because he's that big play guy, and he's the one that they take shots
with. He'll be the one against Revis, yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, Revis has shown this year he's not afraid to get burned deep.
Yeah, he's just not fast enough anymore. He's beat up.
Yeah. Is there anyone else down from that range? Like, if Ben is back, do you consider Sammy Coates at 4,300?
Yeah, if Ben's back. But even then, I don't know.
How about Corey Coleman? It looks like he's going to start for the Browns. Like, I just find that Browns offense really intriguing. Like, I think Pryor, again, is probably a good play. People are saying, oh, well, Coleman's back. His target share is going to go down. And that might be true. But I actually think it's a net positive for him just because I feel like the Browns are going to be better on offense and it might give them more chances to score.
Yeah, and Dallas has some secondary injuries right now. Morris Claiborne got injured, and another one of their cornerbacks got injured as well last week. I will look up specifically who that was, but this is not the same Dallas pass defense that has actually been passable this year.
When was the last time that Allen Robinson was below $7,000?
Probably his rookie year, but it does not matter to me.
Just not the 15 targets don't do it for you?
I was just on SiriusXM.
That is. Are you sure you weren't on Fantasy Sports Radio?
I was on Fantasy Sports Radio, and they were asking me some questions about Allen Robinson, about DeAndre Hopkins, and just sort of my theory with these guys is I don't want to bet on Blake Bortles figuring it out. I don't want to bet on Brock Osweiler figuring it out. Like, I think there's more profit potential there in just assuming that those guys are bad and are going to play bad. The guys injured for Dallas, though, Scandrick and Barry Church as well. So this is definitely a different secondary than has been playing.
A few other guys tournament-wise that I'm looking at. I'm not going to be touching Amari Cooper, but I do think that Michael Crabtree could have some value at $64 in what is a really bad matchup, but they might just focus on him. Cooper was dominated by the Broncos last year. He ended up with 4 catches and 47 yards in 2 games. Crabtree actually came out of it all right, and it just seems like it's every other week, and whoever's coming off the big week has the poor week the next week, and that would line up perfectly for Crabtree. Stephon Diggs at $7,900. Everyone's going to be on Rudolph because he's playing the Lions.
Diggs for sure.
But Diggs, man, he looked healthy Monday night. That was the one big takeaway, positive-wise, for the Vikings that I saw.
Yeah, and he had a 60-yard touchdown that Bradford just missed him on. Now that's going to happen. Bradford is going to miss guys, you know, wide open down the field, but the opportunity is definitely there.
Emmanuel Sanders, $6,300. We talked about Booker against the Raiders. If somehow the Raiders can score a few points in that game and it forces Denver into the air, I think you could be looking at, I don't want to say a 10-catch day for Emmanuel Sanders, but he's the one getting all the targets. He's the one getting all the red zone targets, too.
Yeah, I kind of like Thomas more just in general as a player, but they would both be like fine for a secondary play. I don't think I'm targeting either one of them too much.
Okay, how about Willie Snead then? If we're going to like Thomas, people are going to be on Cooks. It seems like Snead is somewhat forgotten here and against the Niners.
No, I'm just mashing in Thomas.
Would you play like a Breeze Snead Thomas stack, like triple stack?
I'd be more likely to play Breeze Thomas Fleener and just hope Fleener catches 2 touchdowns.
Fleener played like 10% of the snaps last week. Josh Hill was on the field the entire time.
But when he's out there, he's running pass routes, though.
But he's terrible. So if you're getting him down to 10% and he's running pass routes on all of them, let's say he sees the ball 8 times, I mean, he's going to drop at least 7 of them. So that's tough. Tough running for Kobe Fleener.
Hey, 4 for 4 on targets to catches last week.
He's so bad. Fleener sucks.
He's not good.
Fleener's terrible.
Tight end is so brutal this week, though.
Everyone's just going to use Kyle Rudolph at 4K, aren't they? I would think. I mean, that was my logic behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that's who I'm going to use.
Yeah, I think, like, he might be the highest owned tight end percentage-wise in cash games this season.
It's going to be close, just because, like, this really is a miserable week.
Well,
like,
there's no good tight ends left. Like, Gronk's gone, Reed's gone, even Fedorowicz is gone. I'm forgetting others. Zach Miller's not playing. And, you know, there's like 3 other guys too that just aren't playing. Eifert's not available, and he's
Gates and Henry cancel each other out. Moncrief back ruins Doyle. Pitta can't score touchdowns. Barnage has a brutal matchup against Dallas. Julius Thomas sucks. Like, all these guys.
Jimmy Graham is playing Monday night. Cameron Brate is playing on Thursday night. If people wanted to use Austin Hooper at the min, I mean, he's playing on Thursday night. You can't do it. So everything is just lining up for, hey, Kyle Rudolph's wildly underpriced for his target share and his matchup. Let's just use him. In tournaments, I mean, I'll save that for tight ends. We'll get into that. I just want to talk about one more guy. 2 more guys. Tyreek Hill of the Chiefs. Bad guy in real life. Could be a decent fantasy asset this week, especially if there's no Spencer Ware and with Foles starting at quarterback. Do you think that he, because of his big playability, $3,400, would you roll him out in a lineup or two?
Yeah, absolutely, because he looks good, too. Like, it doesn't seem like these are sort of fluky plays. Like, I mean, you know, he scored a touchdown against the Saints. He had 1 target for 1 touchdown and 1 catch. But the interesting thing is I think they would give him some more carries. They'd give him, you know, 2 or 3 carries if Ware were to miss this game.
Does he return kicks or punts?
Punts.
Punts? Would you go a double dip with the Chiefs against the Jags and Tyreek
Hill? I mean, the Chiefs are like the chalkiest defense ever, but I'm making significant concessions to get them at cash games.
Oh, really? I have another defense lined up for cash games that's a bit cheaper. I mean, I like the Chiefs more, but where it's like $800 cheaper, I like the savings a little bit. Last guy, Brian Quick against the Panthers, who give up a lot of big plays. Brian Quick's been really good, and he's still only $3,400.
I mean, why don't you just go Kenny Britt, the God?
Because I think Quick is better.
Yeah, I mean, Britt has a pretty big market share when they do pass the ball. Although, I guess he had 9 targets over in London. I didn't watch that game.
I mean, and also, Kenny Britt is $1,000 more than Brian Quick.
Yeah, Quick is pretty good, I think. Like, I think he's a good player, but I'm just, yeah, you know what? I'll sign off on Quick in tournaments.
Woo! Using some Brian Quick. He's real quick. You can go run to the end zone, 3 touchdowns. Chalk it up now. Might as well use Case Keenum while you're at it, because you just know those are just locked in for Brian Quick. Let's talk quarterbacks.
Yes.
Let's talk quarterbacks.
Lock it in.
Yeah, let's talk quarterbacks. We talked about all these values. You got to spend your money somewhere. And for me, it's going to go to the top of quarterback. I'm going to use Aaron Rodgers in cash games. He's $7,800. He's going to throw the ball 90 times. So that's going to turn out pretty well against the Colts, I'd imagine.
Rodgers is tier one by himself. Luck, Tannehill.
Dude.
There you go.
I would.
Well, Tannehill averages like 2 points, like for his career, when he plays against a bottom 10 pass defense, as you would expect, he averages 2 more fantasy points than his normal average, 21 DK points per game against bottom 10 pass defenses. And I don't think they're going to be able to run, so I think the volume will be there for Tannehill this week.
For tournaments, I would rather roll out Colin Kaepernick at the same price because I think, well, I'm talking about the highest ceiling possible in terms of what could possibly
happen.
Yeah,
Cap could have 30.
I mean, Cap could hit the bonus on rushing and passing against the Saints because they're such a bad defense.
How sick would that be?
That'd be awesome. That's why I would rather roll him out than Tannehill, though.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with that. Like, I'm not going to – I think Tannehill is fine. Or I think Kaepernick is fine.
Yeah, I mean, Kaepernick is also, you know, in play for, like, 11 fantasy points as well, although he's averaging 7.5 just on the ground per game in the two starts. So the floor is actually there if you wanted to really save it. I mean, if you wanted to play a cash quarterback that it costs absolutely nothing, I think I'd go with Sam Bradford at 5K against the Lions. I don't care how bad he looked on Monday night. He's going to be fine this week.
Yeah, I mean, they're so bad. But I was also 0% on Osweiler.
Oh, really? I used some Osweiler. Didn't work out. I fortunately turned some Osweiler shares into Derek Carr shares at the last second because I was like, I have too much Brock Osweiler. This isn't good. And I had none of the Raiders. It worked out. That was kind of key for me this week. Is there anyone else we should be talking about, though? You mentioned Luck. He's 6,700. I'm probably going to end up fading him.
Cam.
Yeah. Do you think people
he
are
ran
gonna...
he 7 rush attempts last week, and that's what he has to do. Like if he runs, he's back to being, you know, one of the best 5 fantasy quarterbacks.
Would you put Mariota in that class too? I know he doesn't get all the goal line rushes because they just give the ball to Murray, but he is running more and he's really effective when he runs. And this Chargers game could turn into a shootout.
Yeah, I like both Mariota and Rivers for tournaments a little bit.
Is there anyone else you'd consider? Like, would you go Carr again? Because I wouldn't, but I know people are going to want to do it after watching last week.
Yeah, it just feels like I would rather take some Simeon teams because the Raiders give up so many yards.
Yeah, I mean, I can actually get on board with that. What about McCown at 5,400 against Dallas? You just think that there's not going to be enough plays to go around?
Yeah, I think Dak and McCown, like, I think that game does kind of err on high scoring with these injuries to Dallas, but like I don't consider either one of them core enough plays to make it a point to get exposure to them.
Dak is really interesting, though, because people – I had Dak ranked, I think, at like 11 or 12 in my like week-long rankings, and people are giving me a lot of heat for it, being like, why isn't Dak inside the top 5? Just I don't think this game lends itself well to him scoring a lot of fantasy points. Like, I think he'll be efficient. I think he'll be good. But if you think that Ezekiel Elliott is – far and away the best play at running back, that means Dak's probably not doing much.
Yeah, and I think what I said in my column this week is if this game goes how Jason Garrett wants it to, there's almost no way Dak gets to 18 DraftKings points.
Yeah, he'd have to rush in a touchdown or two, basically, and steal them from Elliott.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as being real likely.
I mean, it happened in the Sunday night or on their first touchdown, didn't it?
I don't remember.
Oh, as a Cowboys fan, how worried are you that the NFL is still looking into these Zeke, like, sexual assault allegations or domestic abuse or whatever it is? Because I keep seeing this headline pop up and pop up. I don't even really know what's going on with it, but I'd be worried.
We got Dak. We don't need Elliott.
Don't need Elliott. Morris just as good, basically?
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's not just as good, but he'll be fine.
Would you take Blake Bortles this week?
No. I am all in on Chiefs -8, -9, -10, -10.5, whatever you get it at, and Chiefs defense and West are where.
All right, let's talk defenses then. Because you mentioned the Chiefs are the chalk. I would tend to agree with that. They come in at $3,500. And even that double dip with Tyreek Hill, I think, is somewhat interesting in tournament play if you want to do that. But at the top, you have the Vikings, Broncos, Chiefs, Cowboys, Panthers, Ravens, Giants, Eagles, Dolphins, and Chargers. That is your $3,000 to $4,000 range. And then dipping below that, you have like the Steelers, the Jets, the Packers, Raiders, Titans, Lions, Rams, Jags, Saints, and that whole grouping. If the Chiefs is the chalk, I think paying up to the Vikings against Stafford isn't a crazy idea, especially if Xavier Rhodes plays, but I'm going to be using a lot of the Packers' defense. The Packers' defense is fourth in adjusted sack rate. Andrew Luck got sacked six times last week against the Chiefs' pass rush, which had not been good all season. Didn't matter. I don't care if Luck posts 30. I think the Packers' D is very live in this game and has a pretty good floor for close to double digits.
Pretty much any defense against Luck has a floor close to double digits. He gives up turnovers, he gives up sacks, like, absolutely. But, yeah, for me, Chiefs. Like, they're going to sack Blake Bortles five times. They're drawing super live to a defensive touchdown. I think the shutout is in play here. Like, it's just everything
about it. You can't shut out the Jags. That's impossible.
I mean, one of these weeks, Bortles isn't going to have 300 yards in the fourth quarter. He's just going to be so bad that he doesn't do it.
What about Eagles against Eli? Like, that seems good, doesn't it?
Oh, and the Eagles just, they score defensive touchdowns every week.
So they would have to be in the mix for tournament, too. So if you want to mix in, for me, like, I probably won't go super big on the Chiefs. Like, I'll be underweight or maybe around weight. What do you think their ownership's going to be in, like, the millionaire maker? Like, 25%?
Oh, higher than that.
You think so? Higher than 20? That's a lot for a defense.
They have the highest ownership projection I've ever seen for a defense.
Well, wouldn't it make sense just to fade them then, because this is defenses and there's no position that's more high variance than defense?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I think in cash you get them in, and then I think you can go 0% Chiefs in tournaments if that's the sort of style that you play.
Yeah,
where
I mean,
you just embrace the variance.
Yeah, listen, I will embrace the variance on this one because I'm going to load up on Packers, Eagles, and I'm going to take the Vikings. I think they make Matt Stafford look foolish this week. You talked about how you like the Chiefs, like -9, -10. I like the Vikings at home -6 a lot.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Yeah, and everyone's going to be like, oh, Minnesota sucks. I watched them on Monday night, and they are terrible. No way they could ever beat the Lions. Like, I'm hearing this. Like, it's so ridiculous. The recency bias people put into everything. They're going to be fine. And the Detroit's like 31st in adjusted sack rate. If there's ever a team primed not to take advantage of how bad Minnesota's offensive line is, it's Detroit.
Yeah, and Detroit's defense is worse. They are dead last in DVOA, so it's not like it's going to be that. Like, Bradford can score on them.
Yeah, and they have no running game, meaning Stafford's going to throw the ball like 40 to 50 times.
Yeah, no doubt about that at all.
And we haven't seen bad Matt Stafford in a while. Like, he's due for one of these just vintage Stafford sidearm pick six games, isn't he?
We really haven't gotten terrible Stafford in a long time. It's a big bummer.
If you're going to go to the very bottom, is there any defense that kind of piques your fancy at all? Like Saints, $2,300?
I mean, pretty much every week on this show, like when salaries have necessitated it, I've given like some completely terrible defense that's like dead minimum. So like, I got no problem taking the Saints. I got no problem taking the Rams. Like, if that's the way you're going, I'm just personally not doing that this week.
Yeah, you don't need to. There's too many values on the board where you're not paying up for, like, four guys. So you can make a very balanced team and actually get an adequate defense in there, too. Let's finish this off with tight ends. Olsen is at the top, but realistically speaking, Kyle Rudolph, $4,000. In cash games, I think he's going to be 75 to 80% owned.
Well, that is a lot of ownership for a tight end. But
what other tight end is there? I mean, I like Lance Kendricks at $2,900. He's a tournament guy for me. I'd pay up for Olsen if I can, and if that's the way I want to do it in tournaments. But I see no reason not to take Rudolph with the best matchup. Probably going to get around 8 targets, and for the price point that he's at, he doesn't even have to do much to return value.
I mean, Pitta, Walker, Kelsey, like, these are all viable plays. Hunter Henry,
Why would you play Hunter Henry, though? I'd rather play Gates than Henry at this point.
Yeah, Gates is 3K. Actually, I think Gates actually 9 and 10 targets last 2 weeks. I think Gates is a potential cash play at 3K.
Yeah, I don't see you with since no one's paying up anywhere, why wouldn't you just take Rudolph? Because everyone else has him? Like, would you fade him in cash games because he's too owned?
No. You take him in cash, but I think he's, like, one of the easiest underweight tournament plays ever. Just because, like, tight end, it just comes down to if you catch a touchdown or not.
Yeah, I mean, I can get on board with that for tournament play. But what do you think, like, millionaire maker-wise, what do you think that Rudolph's ownership's going to be, 30%?
Oh, I don't know. If you think he's 80% in cash, he's got to be, like, 35 or something crazy like that.
Well, what was Booker last week in the Millie Maker? Because in cash, he was like 80%.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have it up, but he had to be crazy owned.
Yeah, I would think so. Any interest in guys like Ebron? Even Zach Ertz in a rebound here against the Giants who just struggle over the middle of the field?
Yeah. I mean, I think any of these mid-range tight end plays are semi-justifiable, honestly. But I think I'm stuck on Gates now, actually.
No, cheap guy. Pivot off. I mean, you use some Gates, but pivot off him. Use Lance Kendricks. I'm telling you. Lance Kendricks is due for a big game here. 8 targets and 9 targets the last 2 weeks. Carolina gives up the second most DK points to tight ends. I mean, and Gurley's futility plays a lot into this because where he's not getting it going on the ground, they have to pass more. And Lance Kendricks is just kind of standing there, you know, 5 yards away from Case Keenum. Case Keenum can make that pass. I'm sure of it.
I don't think Kendricks is the worst play you've ever recommended on this show.
Well, yeah, no shit. I recommend Ginn every week. Oh, you know who's back, probably? Steve Smith.
No, who cares?
You have to listen, people care about Steve Smith Sonor. That guy's legit.
No, he's not.
Any additional comments on tight end? Like, honestly, it's Rudolph and in cash games, and for me, in tournaments, it's going to be Kendricks, Gates, and Greg Olsen if I can pay up. Maybe some Pitta, because almost like Tyrell Williams, I think Pitta has seen the most targets of any player in football without scoring a touchdown, which is kind of nuts.
Yeah, Pitta is kind of in that same boat with Tyrell, huh?
Yeah, Tyrell just had. I mean, Tyrell scored touchdowns. He just has all the red zone looks and hasn't converted on any of them.
I mean, Pitta has 10 targets each of the last 2 weeks, and like no one's talking about him for fantasy.
Yeah, but I feel a lot of that has to do with. I mean, there's a correlation there. Wallace has over 10 targets the last 2 weeks. So does Pitta. But those are the two games without Steve Smith.
Steve Smith sucks. Ugh, why does he exist?
Because he's awesome, and he's Steve Smith, and he's gangsta.
Pitta's longest reception since week 3 is 14 yards. What a buster.
It's shocking to me that he doesn't have a touchdown then.
I guess so. He's just kind of taking up space out there.
Yeah, I guess so. So maybe not a ton of Pitta because of the upside, but maybe a roll of the dice or two. But like I said, Rudolph, underweight in tournaments, all the cash. Gates at 3K. Kendricks, I like a little bit more at 2,900. And then I would go Olsen over Kelsey, especially with Olsen being the highest price guy, being so much more than everyone else and coming off a bad week. You might be able to sneak him through with very low ownership.
Yeah, I think Olsen will be sub 10% almost for sure.
Which is kind of crazy, considering it's Greg Olsen.
Yeah, considering and they just didn't need to throw at all last week. Like, they threw 27 times.
Yeah. All right, let's finish this up here. I mean, that's enough DK, as I have been telling people that we have been going through at the end of each shows when I have a guest on to create some evergreen content for the Christmas break and for, you know, when I'm not here and the station needs to play something. And I like these conversations. It allows people to get into the world of the guests instead of just hearing them talk about fantasy. So I've asked Davis to come up with a topic. Last week, he expanded on literature and how he enjoys to read, thinking he's a big man because he's literate, unlike myself, which, you know, made me feel bad for a bit, but I'm trying to learn how to read a little. So what do you want to talk about this week, Davis?
I actually think I'm going to find a way to make myself more pretentious than last week.
Yeah, but, I mean, okay, what is it?
Okay, so you know how America's going through this presidential election right now, right?
You're just getting
to watch from afar.
I hadn't heard about this. You see, when you live outside of America, everything's like 5 to 10 years behind. So I'm really on this Barack Obama guy. I think he might win.
He's drawn live. But so a big issue, obviously, is that no American really knows what the fuck is going on anywhere in the world. And I have a really easy way for everyone who listens to the show to spend 5 minutes a day and catch up on what's going on in the rest of the world and actually be informed.
You know, I live in the rest of the world, so I feel like I can kind of shed some insight into this as well.
Well, you can also use this. This is a solution that I would endorse for anyone, no matter where they live in the world.
Okay.
So a big issue is that American news outlets, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, are generally all garbage. They're incredibly biased. Like, there's just no way around the fact that they're not really great at their jobs. So a newspaper that I've used and read for a long time is the Economist. And they have an app for iPhones and Androids called The Economist Espresso. And if you pay $2 a month, you get little bite-sized, you know, 30-second, two-paragraph articles on what's happening in the world. You open it up, it downloads every morning, and it's just quick little summaries. There's one on the market. There's, you know, like sort of the five biggest stories in the paper that day summarized really, really small, and then there is an update on, you know, world government, sort of the biggest thing happening in the, you know, governments outside of the country that you live in. And I officially endorse this product, and I think everyone who doesn't want to have their head under a rock should download and use this app.
What was the name of the app again?
It's called the Economist Espresso app. If you just type in the Economist on the App Store or Espresso on the App Store, it'll come right up.
Oh, I would also like to give a special shout-out as well to another Economist product. I don't know if they do it anymore because I didn't get it last year, but they used to release, like, a demographics guide. It's just a bunch of lists, basically, in, like, where in the world.
Yeah, like the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where do you think the most people smoke in the world and as of, like, 2014 and what that percentage is?
I would assume, like, France and, like, you know, 30% or something.
No, see, you have to think of it in other terms than that, because France is still, like, it's a first world country, obviously, but it's, like, a leading country. People know about the health risks of smoking there, and, well, the French enjoy themselves a cig or two, just like myself. You know, there's enough people with enough common sense to know not to smoke. In other countries where, you know, it's a bit more behind, like, basically if you look at the Iron Curtain and go to the eastern side of it, you're going to see all these ex-Soviet republics where it's like, I don't know, I believe the leader was, I want to say it was Estonia, and it was like 70% of people smoke, something crazy like that.
Ooh, that is a lot of people. I smoke from time to time, and even I think that is terrible.
I mean, as we were discussing the other day on Twitter, the best time to smoke is before and after the gym. Because, I mean, it really...
I don't do it before, because then I definitely feel it. But, like, if I like, go in and I knock out, like, 4 or 5 miles, like, I'm going to smoke afterward, probably.
Oh, see, that's my move. On the way into the gym, I just hack a dart outside, go run, like, 4 miles, and that 4 miles turns into, like, 8 miles, because, like, your lungs are full of smoke. You don't have the same breathing, so you're getting an extra good workout. I feel like that might lead to a heart attack at some point, but, you know, I'm gonna keep trying it out.
I don't think that's science, Pat. I think that is very anti-scientific.
I don't know. Sounds pretty scientific to me.
We need a doctor.
Oh, I have a doctor on Thursday's show. His name is Tim Andakust.
Ask him. Ask him his opinion.
Yeah, he's not a medical doctor. So he'll probably give me the wrong... And he loves smoking more than anyone I've ever met.
Smart guy.
No, he's a doctor.
I honestly wish I would have been born in, like, 1937, so no one would have ever told me how bad smoking was for me. Now I just have this overriding guilt complex every time I buy a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, I feel bad for, like, 2 seconds until I, like, light up a smoke, and I'm like, whoa, why am I not doing this all the time?
All the time, right? Right? It's just like, why am I not just... You know when I smoke now, more or less, is when I go golf.
Oh, man. DK, have you ever averaged a cig a hole on a golf course? Because I have.
Oh, most certainly. I've smoked an entire pack while out golfing before.
Yeah. I actually was once playing golf with Tim, and he left his pack, like, somewhere, and he didn't know where it went. It fell out of our golf cart, and he quit the hole we were on, got started, like, sweating and getting stressed, and, like, we didn't see him for, like, another 20 minutes, and he came back and found his pack 4 holes behind, and I've never seen anyone more happy in my life.
I mean, you gotta have backup. Like, you can't be out on the golf course without nicotine. I think it's too stressful.
Would you ever pack a lipper and go golfing? Because I used to do that too.
I mean, I've had a lip in while we were doing this show.
Oh, so you're good to go.
I just like live with one in.
Do you really? The only reason I ever started smoking was to quit chewing tobacco, which I found out did not lead to a lot of success with women.
I don't let any girls know that I chew or smoke, but...
No. I feel like you're taking that the wrong way. Smoking, I mean, if you're going to go out and, you know, pick up women at bars or do whatever and have some social drinks, smoking is the perfect way to meet people because you're outside. It's the only place, especially like if you go to a club, you can't hear anyone inside the club. You don't know what's going on, but people outside, they can have a quick chat. That's where you meet people.
I mean, I kind of have a girlfriend right now, like kind of, sort of.
Well, I'm getting married, so this is like classic vintage 10 years ago Pat Mayo advice.
Yeah, it's not great advice. No pretty girls smoke anymore.
Oh, that is such a lie. Do you know who smokes when they drink? Everyone.
Yeah, okay. I mean, okay, fair point.
So you catch them outside, they're already drunk,
chat
them up.
This is like classic.
The social lubrication is already there to foster a relationship.
This is just incredibly, incredibly classic, like... Oh, it worked for me like 8 years ago back when I was single. Like, you probably never even had Tinder, huh?
No, I actually met my wife on Tinder, so.
Did you really?
I did, yeah. I'm a Tinder success story. I'm trying to get Tinder to sponsor my wedding
my
to cut down on the costs.
That is so dope. That's like the coolest story I've ever heard.
Hey, listen, we were both running through our whole Tinder game, and, you know, eventually. The great thing that I found about Tinder was I had Tinder for probably, like, I've been engaged now for like a year and a half. We've been dating for like just over 2 years. So I had Tinder for a good year and a bit. Like, I had it when I lived in Manhattan, which was awesome. And then I moved back to Toronto and it was just as good because, you know, there's 6 million people that live here and everyone who lives downtown has Tinder. You could set your radius to like a quarter mile and you'd have thousands of people. So I probably met, I want to say like 100 to 150 people just through Tinder. Like, I would never meet that many people in my day-to-day life. It was a, weirdly enough...
No, I 100% endorse Tinder.
Despite being, I mean, used for my purposes, a completely hookup app, it was still a great way to meet people.
Yeah, I met like a ton of cool girls on Tinder.
Yeah. There's new ones out now. So, like, I haven't used Bumble. I've been off the market since, like, Bumble came out.
Bumble's tough if you're not in, like, the top 10th percentile of attractiveness, which I don't think I am.
Well, I mean, look who you're talking to. Come on here.
Hey, you're a pretty guy, Pat. You got a face for TV.
It's all about the angles, though, because who is now going to be my future wife, when we first met, like, I'm 5'9", but... With the way, I mean, I'm good at using a camera, so I can angle a camera to make myself look like I'm like 6'4". She was like, I thought you were really, really tall. I was like, sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, big, I mean, I'm like 5'4", so that's a big thing for me.
I'm gonna send you like an angle guide to make sure you can take some good angles, and it'll make you look really tall.
All right, I'm gonna use that.
And then you use that just, you know, it's basically a subterfuge.
I don't even have Tinder anymore, though. Like,
you deleted the app?
Well, I had to reboot my phone because I like broke the screen and I had to like install the new iOS and it bricked my phone out and like I was kind of seeing this girl, so I just didn't even think to re-download it. I didn't even realize that I didn't have it until we started having a conversation. Yeah. I think I'm still paying for Tinder Plus, so I should probably cancel that.
You have to pay for Tinder? I missed that boat.
It's like they limited the amount of swipes you could have, and like they added like bells and whistles, obviously.
What do you mean with limited the amount of swipes? I can't just power swipe through everyone?
Nope.
It's
no,
like,
they,
oh,
they limited that.
It's Saturday night. I'm out at the bar. Let me open up Tinder and swipe right on the first 100 people that come up and see what happens. Like, can't do that?
No, doesn't happen anymore.
That sounds horrible.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
so they get you. They get you to pay like $5.99 a month.
$5.99 a month. That's such a ripoff.
It is, and I'm paying for it without using it. So I'm gonna.
That's an even bigger ripoff.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it on the Pat Mayo Hour. Thank you for being on the line, Davis. Good luck this week.
Absolutely, you too, my guy.
I think Leone will be back to join us next week, though, because he keeps texting me being like, I have hot takes for Davis. And I'm like, really? Leone, you got some hot takes? Apparently he just wants to disagree with you the entire time.
I mean, that's Leone's favorite thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one time I ever see him get jazzed up.
I love Michael Leone. Yeah. He's just the best.
Special shout.
Have you met Leone in person?
Yeah, I met Leone. Kept coming up here. We had a DraftKings show, like sponsored by DraftKings, at the network last year. So we'd always bring in one guest a week from wherever. And Leone, I think, came up twice. He brought his wife one time. We all hung out as a couple date. It was great.
Yeah, he was like in town, like here in Kansas City, and we went out to dinner together. He's a goober.
Oh yeah, real nice guy though.
One of the best.
So a special shout out to Leone. Go to dailyroto.com, check him out, and on Twitter at @2hats1mike. You can also follow Davis at @davismatic, and of course you can check out all of his work up at fantasyinsiders.com. At the PME on Twitter is where you can get at me. And remember to subscribe to the Pat Mayo Hour on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Audio Boom as well, the new hosting site for the Pat Mayo Hour. Good luck this week. I'm Pat Mayo. I'll see you next time.